This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. And let's start today with the ongoing, intensifying conversation about racism on American college campuses. We've been speaking with a number of people on this issue, including professors, college presidents, and student activists. Today, we're going to hear from a distinguished African-American law school professor who has provocative pushback to some of that activism. But first, a bit of context. This week, Martha Minow, dean of the Harvard Law School, created a special committee to examine whether the school should abandon its official seal. The symbol features the coat of arms of the royal family, a Revolutionary-era slave-owning family in Massachusetts. In 1779, their land and money led to the founding of Harvard Law School. Symbols are important, Dean Minow told the Boston Globe. They become even more important when people care about them and focus on them. Which is why another incident at the law school has also drawn intense scrutiny. Earlier this month, someone defaced the portraits of African-American Harvard Law School professors. Actually, I should say that happened in November. Their faces were covered with strips of black tape. Harvard police are treating it as a potential hate crime. But Randall Kennedy sees it differently. He is black, and he's been a Harvard Law School professor for decades. His portrait is among those defaced. But in a recent New York Times op-ed, Kennedy cautions against overreaction and calls instead for a calibrated response. I spoke with Randall Kennedy earlier today, and he says he didn't immediately jump to the conclusion that the black tape was a racist act. Instead, it puzzled him.
Let's take the worst. Let's suppose that it was somebody who was showing contempt, even hatred, toward me, towards other black professors, towards black people in general. What does one do with that? Well, is this emblematic of the Harvard Law School that I know, or is this some idiosyncratic thing? The fact of the matter is, though, and again, it seems to me that everyone should be attentive to facts, but particularly people in a law school should be very attentive to facts. We do not know who did this. We do not know the why of what was behind it. It is susceptible to a wide range of interpretations. The interpretation that I think is ascendant is the idea that this was, you know, a sort of, a show of contempt toward black people. But let's be very attentive to what we know and what we don't know.
Okay. Point taken. But you do ask the question in your op-ed that substantial numbers of onlookers believe the episode offers a glimpse into the soul of Harvard Law
Yes.
School. You don't share that opinion.
No, and in fact, the soul of Harvard Law School has been shown by the reaction. Within hours of the event, the portraits that had been defaced have been festooned with hundreds of stickers from students saying, "We appreciate what you do, we respect you." The dean of the law school has called two, you know, all school meetings about this. There's a third one that's planned for Friday. I mean, there has been a total outpouring of repudiation by the Harvard Law School community. And as far as I'm concerned, that's emblematic of the Harvard Law School that I know.
So here's a response to what you wrote. And I'm sure, as you're well aware, there have been many of them. Professor Kennedy, this one comes from Bianca Tylek. She's a third year Harvard Law School student. She wrote in the Huffington Post. And basically, she agrees with you on one thing, that this particular action, it didn't hurt her. She doesn't feel hurt. But in part, it's because she says stuff like that happens all the time. I mean, racist slights, racist incidents, racist presuppositions about who she is and why she's at Harvard Law School, she experiences them all the time. And then she goes on and says, you know, speaking to the question of the soul of Harvard Law School, she says, "When you wonder what this has to do with Harvard Law School, ask yourself this. Who drafted the legislation, regulations, and policies in America that have continued to entrench the racial disparities in incarceration, educational achievement, and economic opportunity? Among others, many of our graduates." So she says, so long as this kind of racism persists in the nation, people ought to be making a big deal, even of seemingly smaller incidents like tape over the faces of faculty portraits.
A couple of things. Listen, Harvard Law School is not going to be immune to the various pathologies that beset our country, including racism, sexism, all the terrible bigotries that continue to menace us. Now, I've talked with students a good bit, and some of the complaints really strike home to me. On the other hand, there's sometimes when I talk with students, I say, what are you complaining about? They tell me about an incident, and I'll tell them. I'll say, I've heard what you've got to say, but quite frankly, I don't get it. I'm not persuaded. I don't see why you're upset given what you just told me. If someone says, by the way, that they are offended, that doesn't end the conversation with me. I want to know more about it because sometimes you can be rightly offended, but you can also be unjustifiably offended.
Well, I mean, you use pretty pointed language in your op-ed. You say that in the long run, reformers harm themselves by nurturing an inflated sense of victimization.
Yes, absolutely. If you take a look at what some people have said, for instance, in the aftermath of the defacement, people talk about, for instance, going around with a heavy, heavy burden of oppression at Harvard Law School. Now, I want to know more about why they feel the way they feel, but the Harvard Law School that I know, that I've experienced, is a place that is, deeply privileged. And frankly, I get the sense sometimes that people are they've learned a script. It's not simply something happens and they feel this way. We make choices to some extent about the way we want to feel. And I get the sense sometimes that people think that they're going to get what they want through portraying themselves as being traumatized. And I view that as being, as self-defeating.
But Professor Kennedy, people listening to this, some of them are thinking right now, no, it is not a script that I've learned. Mm-hmm. It's the life that I have lived.
Yes, and for some, that could be. But for some, I'm convinced that that's not the case. But if we're going to have a conversation, let's truly have a conversation. I could be wrong about things. I'm simply talking with you now. I'm sharing my impressions. My impressions change. I'm just urging people who read my stuff to, be similarly open to, changing their minds.
Yeah. So, this is really interesting to me because you hinted at something a little earlier, which I want to explore a bit further. Is there a question of a generational mm-hmm. difference here? Because I think it's an important one that actually doesn't often get explored enough. In a response to your op-ed, a couple of your colleagues at Harvard Law School, John Hansen mm-hmm. And Jacob Lipton, wrote in on their blog, The Justice Blog, that they basically see that the idea of genuinely hurtful, powerful, inhibiting racism that you seem to be saying is the one that deserves attention, in their words, is, of the era of Bull Connor, George Wallace, the KKK, and so on. And then they go on to say that sort of ugly racism of that sort is no longer of us or from us, but rather, and this is their words, racism today is of a very different version. This type of racism can be hard to see and is often easy to dismiss, but it is malleable and insidious. Mm-hmm. And so, first of all, what's your response to that? Basically, they're saying, hey, Professor Kennedy, it doesn't have to be dogs and water hoses.
Mm-hmm. I'd say a couple things. Number one, we've seen very vividly in the past year that death-dealing racism is very much with us. It's with us right now as we're speaking on the streets of America. Racism in its pure, terrible, malevolent guise in lots of areas of American life, and it is still with us. Does that exhaust what we're fighting? No, it does not. There is structural racism. There is implicit racism. There is subtle racism. All of these things we confront, and there is nothing that I have written that suggests otherwise. What I say, though, is let's be careful. Is everything racism? Is everything that I disagree with racism? If somebody treats me badly, is it racism or are they a jackass? There are all sorts of bad things in American life, and I think that we need to be very clear and careful in attributing what it is or describing exactly what it is that is the problem. Now, to get back to your point about generation, I think there is probably a generational thing going on. I clearly remember going to movie theaters and going to the side door, mm-hmm. and sitting in the balconies that were reserved for Black people. I clearly remember campuses in which you didn't have to scratch your head about why people were doing what they were doing. It was very clear why they were doing what they were doing, and they weren't apologetic about it. And there's another thing very important. In the early 1960s, when people were facing overt, unapologetic racism, how did the great champions of Black advancement proceed? They proceeded with a dignity that was just absolutely unassailable. You take a look at the early SNCC demonstrators, the people who sat in. They did not talk about being traumatized. They did not ask for anything but simple justice. They carried on in a spirit that I think today's dissidents should look at, and they should model themselves after dissident forebears who really showed what carrying on a struggle is all about. Those students won over people who initially were sort of on the fence, maybe even disagreed with them. And I'm telling dissidents today, listen, there are lots of people in America who haven't taken sides yet. And when you say things and when you act out in a certain way, keep them in mind. Bring people over to your side. Do not do anything or say anything that's going to needlessly push people away from you.
Okay. Do you think that some student activists today are acting without that same dignity?
Yes. Listen, some are pushing me away in the way that they have acted and in the things that they have said.
Do you have any specific examples of how some students or student dissidents, as you put them, have pushed you away?
For instance, I've had some interactions with students in which they, take the attitude that, well, you're not accepting 100% of what we're saying, therefore you are our adversary. Therefore, you just don't get it. Therefore, you're just, a complacent, comfortable person who, is just sort of sitting on your laurels. And when, somebody takes the position that they can't, they don't want to hear it. Either you're 100% with us or forget it. Well, frankly, my attitude with that is, likely to be, well, forget it then. And I don't think that's going to be helpful to students because, I'm basically sympathetic to their overall objective, which is to, create a better world and a better law school, better universities, et cetera.
Where do you think that comes from? Because that meaning the 100% with us or forget it that you've experienced. Because I'm asking you, as a Black man, and mm-hmm. also as a father of teenage mm-hmm. Black children growing up in this country, where do you think that comes from?
I'm not sure where it comes from. I think one contributor to it, and by the way, I think in the aftermath of what's happened, I think you can see it, there is an unhelpful, as far as I'm concerned, pandering to students by people who act as if anything that comes out of the students' mouths is, of course, correct, as if it is verboten to criticize the students. This comes from some of their putative allies. Well, these allies are not helping the students. I've certainly been wrong, and sometimes the students are wrong. And when the students are wrong, it does not help them for their elders to bite their tongues and be quiet and just let them continue to be wrong.
Is that happening at Harvard
Law
School?
I think that I see pandering, and I do not think that that is useful at all. Go on, ask me further questions.
Okay, no, but this is really important. This is really important. And in fact, I have to be perfectly honest, I've had a lot of conversations with you. I have, this is a rare occasion when I've seen you as forcefully animated about something as I'm seeing right now.
Well,
so I appreciate it.
I feel very strongly about this. The fact of the matter is the student dissidents are to be congratulated. And I want to make that very clear. They are to be congratulated. Because at a lot of institutions, has there been complacency? Yes. The students are the ones who have put on the table, well, what about these symbols? What about John C. Calhoun at Yale? What about Woodrow Wilson? What about the royal family? You take these tours of these universities and people either don't say anything or they present these figures in the most anodyne way. The students have said, let's bring it out. That's just one part of what they've done. The student dissidents have done a big service. At the same time, the dissidents in some ways have carried on in a way that I think, frankly, has been counterproductive and has hurt their cause.
I have to interject here because it suddenly occurred to me that, of course, we are also having this conversation on the same week where the nation is observing the 60th anniversary of the Montgomery bus boycott, Rosa Parks.
Absolutely.
But, I mean, this all ties back to where we started with those pieces of black tape that were put over the portraits of African-American faculty at Harvard Law School, because I wonder what you make of this argument, that in 2015, the goal is that we, the students, America, should aim for society where no one feels compelled to put black tape over the faces of black professors. And that in order to get there in 2015, the way to do it is exactly how the students have been doing it, is to react with the passion, with the emotion, to get that conversation going that's been happening at Harvard Law School. But that is how we do it in 2015.
Well, I mean, you know, one thing about a university is criticism. We should always be self-critical. And I do not think that criticism should be viewed as destructive. It should not be viewed as, you know, I'm an enemy. Criticism is absolutely essential. And I do not think it is doing the students any good if people who've been around and have the benefit of experience pander to students and, don't offer them criticism. Criticism is a very useful thing.
Well, Randall Kennedy is a professor at Harvard Law School. His op-ed that appeared in the New York Times is titled Black Tape at Harvard Law School. We have a link to it at our website, radioboston.org. Professor Kennedy, it is always a privilege and a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so much.
Again, thanks so much for having me on.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.